Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Combox Live, where the game lives on, it never dies. In fact, this is a collaboration podcast between Combox and the Caribbean Cricket Podcast. I've got with me over here the founder and co-host from CCP, Santoki, good friend of mine. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, all good. Looking forward to, you know, what I'm expecting to be a highly competitive series between Pakistan and West Indies.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a preview show for that upcoming two-match test series between Pakistan and the West Indies in Trinidad. It is kind of Pakistan's tour of Trinidad because they're playing in Taruba and Port of Spain. But it is, you know, in spirit, the battle for the wooden spoon. Pakistan are rock bottom of the World Test Championship table, and the West Indies are just ahead of them. The West Indies, however, have just come off a Test Series win versus Sri Lanka on home soil. The first time they've defeated Sri Lanka in a Test Series in, I want to say, 23 years. So that's quite a feat. And Pakistan, well, they've got a new captain. They got swept versus Bangladesh again, this time in Bangladesh. And, well, Pakistan cricket is pretty much in the dumps. How do you view these two teams? Because they're both extremely flawed, which does probably, you know, encourage for a very, very exciting contest.
Yeah, on the Caribbean Cricket Podcast, we often say West Indies are down bad. I think a good summary of this series would be the down bad championship. Pakistan, one of the few international sides that match us in terms of just being purely chaotic, never a dull day. And I'm hesitant to use the word favourite, but I would say going into this series, West Indies may be slight favourites, based on the performances against Sri Lanka, which is something I never thought I would say. However, I don't think we've beaten Pakistan home or away in about 25 years, if memory serves me correctly. So it's going to be a tough challenge. But as I said, looking forward to it.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember the last time Pakistan toured the West Indies for a test series. The test team looked in better shape. I think they should have won that test series 2-0. But then Hasan Ali dropped the catch in the first test, I reckon. And Kemar Roach took West Indies home. It was a one-wicket win at Sabina Park and quite the scenes. But very recently, the West Indies toured Pakistan. They played on absolute dust bowls. And that's the Jomel Warrican series, right? 1-1 for the West Indies. It's been quite entertaining. But then again, I also feel that the West Indies are positioned a bit better than Pakistan over here. A, they're playing at home. B, they're coming off a series win versus Sri Lanka at home. And C, Pakistan are really struggling. Like, if there was promotion relegation in the World Test Championship, there was a good chance Pakistan might have even gotten relegated, right? Because they've been very, very poor, abysmal, in fact, since quite a while now. But what I want to actually talk to you about is the surfaces. I am not sure about the pitches anymore, man. If you had asked me 3 months ago, I would have said Pakistan really need to gear up because they're going to get some spicy decks in the West Indies. And based on the decks that we saw in the Sri Lanka series and the practice game that Pakistan are currently playing in Taruba in the Brian Lara Academy, it seems to be pretty flat. And I don't get that because West Indies have an enviable fast bowling quartet. Why would they not go in that direction?
Yeah, it's been a controversial topic. I mean, we see it on a domestic level, how many pitches are so spin-friendly and flat, particularly Trinidad and Guyana. But now we're seeing even Kensington Oval looking really flat as well. Traditionally, that's always been a spicy pitch. And it is baffling. I mean, each island or territory has their own sort of curator who deals with their pitch there. I feel like Cricket West Indies need to take a bit more ownership in terms of producing pitches which suit our attack. As you said, if you've got a bowling attack of Jaden Seals, Alzari Joseph, Shamar Joseph, Kemar Roach, Anderson Phillip, why wouldn't you make it spicy just to kind of suit our needs? The flip side is by having a flat pitch, it allows our batters, which is notoriously our weakest side of the 11, to get runs, which is what we saw in Sri Lanka. We saw Jangu get a double century, Rostin Chase 194, Justin Greaves hit 180. So it allows them to build confidence. However, it is a risky game with the flat pitch. And I'm hoping we will see a bit of movement in Trinidad for that first test. But based on what we've seen in Taruba for the warm-up match, I'm expecting it to be similar conditions.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that series that Australia played in the Caribbean last year and the decks were exceptionally spicy, right? The ball was nipping around. There was some good carry for the keeper as well. It was tough work for batters. Even the Australians struggled, barring, I want to say, Travis Head, Cam Green, perhaps. Alex Carey played a couple of good knocks, right? But generally, Australia won that series because they had their fast bowling cartel, which is better than what the West Indies have. But the West Indies' pace bowling quartet, at least those four guys, right? Alzari Joseph, Kemar Roe, Jaden Seals, and Voldemort, because he is who shall not be named. I think those guys are right up there. And I mean, if the West Indies can find a sustainable method to just bat, I feel like they can really threaten. However, maybe they're thinking that by creating a surface which is a bit of a lottery surface, they bring Pakistan into the game, and because they have a better bowling attack on a flatter surface, they would fare better. Is that the school of thought, Santokhi?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable way, logic around it. And I also think, as you said, that Australia series, when we did have a bit of spice, particularly at Sabina Park, which is notorious for it, we saw what happened, 27 all out. And I don't think anyone in West Indies wants to see a repeat of that. So it is a cautious approach. It worked against Sri Lanka, so I think they'll obviously continue against Pakistan and hope they can sort of eke out a 1-0 series win against Pakistan. And as I said, if Darren Sammy can pull off home series victories against Sri Lanka and Pakistan, what a turnaround it's been for him. Our last home series win before this was 2022. Joe Root's last England series as captain, permanent captain. So it's been a long time coming. It's been a good achievement from Darren Sammy and Captain Austin Chase, who have been under a lot of pressure. You know, last year, 8 tests under the stewardship of Austin Chase. He lost 7 and drew 1. So there was a lot of pressure of him, a lot of fans calling for his head before the Sri Lanka series. He's turned it around. Obviously, one bit of concerning news is he was injured for the ODI series. We recently played against New Zealand. So question marks about whether he will play this series against Pakistan. I'm hoping just his ability with the bat and the ball, particularly if there are spin conditions, I'm hoping he is fit and available, but we'll have to see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite fascinated by the West Indies because every now and then they will pull off something spectacular like that win at the Gabba, right? And yeah. Obviously, being Pakistani, I'm a big Darren Sammy fan. He is a very charismatic character. He can really lift his troops up. And I see a bit of that going on in the West Indies camp right now. I think he's the right man for the job. But there have been a fair few captains who have kind of been switched. Roston Chase is the man at the helm now. I've always found him to be a really good utility player. He has a penchant for scoring irregular brilliant knocks in Test cricket. I remember that fourth innings 100 that he scored in the Yasir Shah game. The would you do that Test match, right? And I mean, I've always thought that he's slightly underachieved in the Test arena because I thought he should at least be averaging 35 or there and thereabouts. And then he provides a lot of value with his off spin, especially versus left-handed batters. Now, he's come off a knock of 194 in that series win against Sri Lanka. You're mentioning his fitness and how that might be a concern, but how crucial is he with respect to the balance of West Indies' side? Because, you know, in the absence of Jason Holder now, they need one of those guys who can, you know, do a job with the ball and can bat. And I feel like he is the perfect candidate.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there's been issues around his inconsistencies. He went about 2 years without playing Test cricket before being named Test captain in true West Indian fashion, out of nowhere, named as captain. As you said, I think Jason Holder is the ultimate all-rounder you'd like to have in your side, his ability to bat and bowl. I don't think we'll see Jason Holder, unfortunately, play Test cricket anytime soon. If ever again, he's approaching 35 years old, hasn't played in 2 years now. Justin Greaves has done an admirable job in terms of with the ball. He's managed to, in the first Test against Sri Lanka, he was the leading wicket taker in the first innings. He has that knack of being able to break partnerships, and he can perform with the bat. Double century in New Zealand, and then 180 against Sri Lanka. So he's in form. He's doing a good job. Roston Chase, I think, particularly with West Indies not choosing a full-time spinner in their most recent Test, so Jamal Warwickham doesn't play, Roston Chase is handy for his ability to part-time spin. So, as you said, he's a good utility player. He kind of fits all molds into that side. So he works the balance at the moment. But in terms of being a captain, he's going to have to prove his consistency a bit more. Obviously, he done well against Sri Lanka. But to be West Indies captain, you've got to have consistent performances, which is something he's lacked over the last few years.
Yep, that has been the bane of his existence, you could say. But Justin Greaves is a very fascinating name that you bring up. The first time I saw him, I was like, all right, I see bits and pieces. I'm not sure if he's going to work in the Test arena. And then bam, two daddy hundreds, right? That double versus New Zealand and then 180-odd quite recently versus Sri Lanka. He has this penchant of going big once he gets to three figures, and that is a very, very sought-after trait in Test cricket. And, you know, I checked his cricket info page, and he's averaging close to 35 with the bat now in Test cricket. Like, the West Indies, a couple of years back when you and I were together at Lord's, would have killed for someone who could average 35 with the bat on a consistent basis. Do you feel like Justin Greaves has hit his ceiling, or is there more to him? Can he, you know, develop further?
Yeah, I definitely think there's more to him. Like you said, 35 in modern day for West Indies cricket, 35 is a remarkable average for someone to kind of get close to that. And he's someone who, you know, he'd kind of started off more as a white ball player. Now he's come into Test cricket, and you can really see how much he's learning from Darren Sammy, or how much confidence he's gaining from working under Darren Sammy. As you said, he goes big, which is really good. Often with West Indian batters, we see them get to a century or just fall short of a century. He manages to put that in. So he's doing, as I said, he's doing a really good job of trying to replace Jason Holder. And I think based on the fact that he's still relatively new to Test cricket, I think we'll see him develop and develop. And I'd like to see him, you know, get runs against Pakistan in home conditions. That would be really good. Also, Amir Jangu as well, someone speaking of being able to convert. I think he's the first cricketer in history to convert his first three centuries in Red Bull cricket to double centuries. So he's got 100% conversion rate, and that is something we desperately need in West Indies. So I think what I really liked about the performance against Sri Lanka was you talked about the miracle in Multan. We've had the miracle in Gabba against Australia. Those relied on generational performances from certain players, whereas the Sri Lanka series was different parts working together, numerous batters, numerous bowlers. It felt like a complete team performance, and we were in control for most of those two tests. So that was encouraging to see. Rather than it hanging on a quote-unquote miracle, one player playing out of their boots, it was kind of a unified performance against Sri Lanka. So I'd like to see that carry on against Pakistan. One caveat I would add is I am disappointed. I mean, there's always talk about cricket and schedules. To see we've had to play a 5 ODI series against New Zealand in the middle, picked up a few injuries. Players have had to adjust the white ball cricket and then 4-day turnaround before the first test. I think that is going to massively impact how the side performs in terms of their fitness and being able to switch back to red ball cricket in such a short turnaround.
That is a fantastic point. And weirdly enough, one man's meat is another man's poison. You're complaining about the calendar, and here I am thinking, Pakistan got a practice game. You never see practice games anymore, right? Like, no. Those are like prehistoric at this point, and it should help them to have, you know, batted for a good 2 days in Taruba prior to this first test. But you're right. When you pack the calendar to this degree that West Indies were playing a 5-match ODI series, and they did pick up a couple of injuries, right? Like, you're telling me about Roston Chase, I was unaware of that. But John Campbell, he won't be featuring, I reckon, in this test series because he pulled his left hamstring. I did catch a bit of those ODIs. Classic, dead wickets, not much happening, ball turning. But then again, I suppose there is this sort of sentiment that, you know, at least they're playing regular cricket, because the irregularity of international cricket has hurt West Indies in the past as well. So at least that little base is covered. And Pakistan are probably the ideal team to play at home once you have been battle hardened, because they'll make mistakes as well. If you make less mistakes than them, you probably win.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also there was the added caveat of the ODIs counting towards World Cup qualification. So originally it was only meant to be 3 ODIs. They extended it to 5. Normally you'd rest and rotate players, bring in second string players. Because they desperately needed the rankings points, they essentially played their first team, which is 80% of our test first 11 in this for these 5 ODIs as well. So again, that pressure on the ODIs also kind of has hindered us. But as you said, more cricket can often develop players regardless of the format. So they'll be coming in there with match fitness. But like you said, I'm just hoping that, you know, playing 5 ODIs hasn't taken too much of a toll, particularly on the likes of, you know, Alzari Joseph, who has, and Kemar Roach, Alzari Joseph, who, Jaden Seals, who have been injury prone in the past. So I'm hoping we manage to come together. And like you said, good to see Pakistan actually get a 4-day official warm-up game against good quality opposition, you know, Tejan Ryan Chanderpool, Josh De Silva. Often we see sides play a 3-day game against, you know, unknown club cricketers. So good preparation for Pakistan.
Some fantastic names in there in that West Indies select 11. There was Ryan Bandhu. I was like, this guy's got to make it, man. There was Jaid Guli. Like, where are they coming up with these names, man? Like, these guys should be superstars. But coming back to the West Indies, because I want to wrap up on the West Indies before we go on a break and then come back to Pakistan. You mentioned the name of Amir Jangu. and I have been very fascinated with this cricketer. I kind of have a thing for left-handed bats, right? And left-handed bowlers, and he is one of them. He can also keep wicket. The first time I learned of him was that ODI. In fact, I think that was his ODI debut where he came and smashed a ton versus Bangladesh and won West Indies the game. And instantly you were like, okay, maybe this kid has something in him. And when he scores that 233 in his second ever test versus Sri Lanka, I think it was his third innings, right? I went and checked his cricket focus. I was like, surely there's something in the first class record over here. And there wasn't. I mean, this is his highest first class score as well, the 233. And he was averaging like 34 or 35 in first class cricket prior to that double. And now he's averaging around 38. So it was a bit of an anomaly that happened against Sri Lanka. But the flip side is maybe he's cracked something over here and maybe he has unlocked a new mode or a new gear. He is probably the most exciting batter coming up in the ranks in West Indian cricket. How do you view him?
Yeah, he's someone who's had to take the long route. Amir Anthony Jangu, so he's got one of the most religiously diverse names I've heard of, incorporating three different religions there. But he's someone who, you know, he couldn't get into the Trinidad domestic side. He went to the University of West Indies. I think his degree is in environmental studies. He's played for combined colleges and campuses. I think he's just turned 29, so he's not someone a lot of people assume he's a young player who's just kind of made his way in. He's had to grind for 10 years to get to where he is, and we've often seen that with the likes of Carl Mayers and Kumar Obama, players who make their debut a bit later because they've had to work their way through the system. So he's someone who's worked really hard, hasn't played a lot of cricket really for someone 29 years of old. But I'm hoping, you know, having this maturity and his age and him knowing potentially this could be, you know, this is his peak. It means he's going to go on onwards and upwards. And I think similar to what we talked about with Graves, I don't think we've seen the ceiling with Jangu. His ability to convert hundreds into double hundreds is remarkable. And I think the more cricket he plays, the more we'll see him kind of break more records. So he's someone who's very, very exciting to see in the middle order. Unfortunately, didn't play the last ODI last night against New Zealand because of a shoulder injury. So again, yikes. Someone who, a question mark over him as well. So I'm talking him up as someone who could potentially win the series, but I don't even know if he'll be stepping out onto the field there. So fingers crossed, Jangu's fit enough.
I mean, I definitely want to see him step onto the crease because he is really exciting. He's shown that character to kind of thrive at the test arena. And generally, right, like you watch him bat and you feel a certain level of insurance. He's not very iffy, you know. And I mean, look, it's been a while since the West Indies have had a very sturdy middle order. And now all of a sudden we're looking at what? Shea Hope, Amir Jangu, and then Greaves and Chase, right?
Yeah.
That looks pretty good to me, or at least it's a big step up from where they were 2 years ago at Lord's versus England in Jimmy's last test match, right? And then you've got other guys performing like Gavin Hodge, who I reckon will bat at three. He just scored 92 versus Pakistan. Tej Narayan, I reckon he'll be back as well now that John Campbell is injured. He'll probably open the batting with Brandon King, and he's just scored a 50 versus Pakistan in the practice game as well. So that's your top seven essentially, right? You're looking at Tej Narayan, then Brandon King, Gavin Hodge, Shea Hope / Amir Jangu, and then the other person would go to five, with Chase and Greaves at six and seven. And then the West Indies will decide whether they want to play all four seamers or they want to go with Jomel Warrakhan plus three seamers. Am I reading room correctly?
No, exactly right. Yeah, that's going to be our lineup. And I think, like you said, what I've liked about Sammy is he's managed to get players like Hope, Brandon King, Justin Graves, traditionally white ball players, he's managed to get them to commit to test cricket and is paying off. But he's also helped, you know, the traditional red ball players, Kavem Hodge, Tej Narayan, Chanderpaul, etc. So he's managed to kind of put together, as I said, I wouldn't say a great batting lineup. It's inexperienced still, but as you said, a vast improvement from what we saw live in person at Lord's 2 years ago.
No, I definitely, when I looked at that squad, I was like, even though there is no squad out yet, I believe I looked at the Sri Lankan Test Series squad. I suppose they're taking their time because they were playing that ODI series. Yeah. But I was like, okay, the batting doesn't look as dire as it once did. Something could happen over here, especially against a team like Pakistan, who has at times really struggled to take 20 wickets in a test match. So I feel that if they can kind of marry some decent batting to their bowling attack, then we could see the official rise of the West Indies, right? Which you guys have been hoping for and talking about for quite a while. And we're all here for it because it's a team that I don't think anyone hates across the globe. Everyone loves the West Indies, like unanimously.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's similar to like how people in football love Brazil. I think most people have some... Oh, you hate Brazil. Okay, well, 99% of the world other than yourself, have Brazil is like, I think it's just because for a lot of people growing up or stories they've heard from their parents have always been about how exciting the West Indies are, and kind of everyone has that sort of love for them. So, yeah, I think they're definitely a likable team. And I mean, it's kind of condescending, but I get the sentiment when people always say, you know, cricket needs a strong West Indies. It's kind of that sentiment that people, West Indies have played such an integral part in the development of international cricket over the last 100 years almost.
Yeah, easily. Anyway, that's it on the West Indies. We'll be moving on to Pakistan. But before that, we'll be taking a short break. You're watching Combox X Caribbean Cricket Podcast Live. Go nowhere. We'll be back in roughly 22 seconds.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Combox X Caribbean Cricket Podcast Live. Damn, that's a real tongue twister. But you are with Santokhi and Behram, and we are currently previewing the upcoming two-match test series between Pakistan and the West Indies in Trinidad. And we've spoken at length about the West Indies, how they might stack up, which players are there to look out for. Coming to Pakistan, we mentioned how Roston Chase is new to the test captaincy job. Well, Pakistan have a new captain as well, but he's not particularly new to the job, is he? Babar Azam, after 2 years, is back as Pakistan's test captain. In fact, it's been 3 years. Yep, 2023 is when he last had the job. His win percentage was 50%, in fact, and he won a test match in the West Indies as well. Now, lost some big series at home versus England and Australia, but if you look at Pakistan in recent times, you'd take Babar's record with both hands, because in their last 18 test matches, Pakistan have won 6. In the Shan Masood tenure, Pakistan lost 12 out of 16 tests and won only 4, and they're going through a real period of terminal decline, and it doesn't look like they'll be coming back up anytime soon. But then you write Pakistan cricket off at your own peril as well. They are capable of the unimaginable. I suppose fans are just waiting for that one series where they really turn up and, you know, lift their spirits again. But I just want to know about your thoughts on Babar the captain, because what I feel is that just when he kind of got what to do, when he understood the job in that series versus Sri Lanka away from home, which Pakistan won 2-0, he gets sacked because of an underwhelming ODI World Cup. And I don't think I ever rated him as a captain prior to that series, but in that series versus Sri Lanka, I actually thought he did a really good job. And now he's back. I worry that there might be a lot of baggage over here, because Babar is someone who, from the face of it, looks like someone who hasn't really dealt well with social media and fame, and it's kind of gotten to him. And there is going to be baggage. The pitchforks will forever be out when Babar Azam does anything. But then on the flip side, there might be some learning. He might be better at the job this time around. How do you view all of this? Because the convenient rhetoric is that, oh, they're going to a tried and tested player, which is also true. I see the comedy. But I also kind of want to be fair to Babar Azam.
Yeah, I think from a West Indies perspective, I would have liked to have seen Shan Masood carry on his down bad captaincy to carry on that losing momentum. But like you said, Babar Azam, at the time, if I remember, it did feel abrupt that he was sort of sacked. And as you said, there's always kind of, he's someone who divides the fan base. I think from my perspective, just because of someone who was, you know, such a big talent in Pakistani cricket, when he doesn't perform, there's always sort of outrage, which sometimes feels unwarranted. But I think new captaincy bounce, he's more mature. He'll definitely want have a point to prove. He scored a century in a warm-up match. The ingredients are there for Babar Azam to sort of lead the line. But it's also hard to tell, because having been without any sort of any captaincy experience for the last 2 years, really, how is he going to adjust? And a lot of senior players, from what I've read, haven't been called for this Pakistani side as well. So he's going to have to bank on, you know, kind of nurturing a few inexperienced players. So it's going to test his own credentials. And he'll also be looking at his own personal form as well. He'll be under pressure following that Bangladesh series to kind of put in big performances himself. So it's juggling a lot for Babar Azam, but he's someone with the quality, you know, who can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been waiting for the quality for quite some time, but I reckon Daniel Rasool wrote a piece in which he called the PCB and Babar Azam relationship a marriage of convenience. And I do see it, because whenever they're, you know, short of answers, they go back to him. We've seen it in multiple formats at this point. And, you know, Shaan Masood's captaincy was untenable. That much was understood. You don't lose 12 tests out of 16 and keep the job. I think, you know, that barely ever happens in cricket. But then I don't think the PCB and the administration or management are on amazing terms with Mohammad Rizwan, so he was ruled out. Saud Shakeel is injured and has experienced a woeful drop in form as well himself, so he was also not a candidate. And I don't think Salman Ali Agha is a sure shot pick for all test matches. Like, if the surface is taking a bit of turn, maybe it makes sense. Otherwise, he only plays if Pakistan opt not to go for a frontline spinner away from home. So there were some caveats with Salman Ali Agha over there as well. So Babar was only the only choice left, I suppose, for the PCB, and they went back to him. But my bigger concern than whether or not he'll be able to, you know, shed the baggage is his personal form with the bat. Babar Azam was on the brink of greatness. He was averaging close to 50, and in the pace-playing pandemic, you know, the wobble seam era, he was one of those rare bats who was unaffected. If anything, he was thriving. And then, you know, come 2023, the form just slumped and it never came back. In his last 29 test innings, he scored 776 runs at a batting average of less than 27. He scored 550s and zero tons in this period. You mentioned that he scored 100 in the warm-up game, which I hope augurs well for him. But that elusive test ton still evades him, right? That is a bit of a concern. And Pakistan aren't particularly spoiled for choice when it comes to batting talent either. It's not like there are other guys in domestic cricket who are really pushing for that spot. But Babar has gotten this extended run because he's Babar. And now that he's captain again, it is high time for him to perform. And my major concern is, if the runs don't come, will he be able to captain? And that's a big worry.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think you kind of only... you only validate your sort of captaincy by leading from example. So if you're in a bad form of run, our players going to listen to you with the same respect. I mean, one consolation is the last test he played against Bangladesh, he hit, 68 and 47. So some degree of form then. And then coming into West Indian conditions has hit that 100. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how Babar Azam performs. I'm more worried about your opener. Is it Azan Awais? So he scored a century in a warm-up game off, 241 balls, which shows a lot of temperament. And then looking at his record, he scored a century in the last test he played against Bangladesh at Mirpur as well. So he's someone young, will be hungry to prove a name for himself. And so he's someone who I'm cautious about him opening and what he can do on these pitches.
Yeah, I am a big fan. Look, this is someone who has done the hard yards. He's come from age group cricket. He's played a fair bit of first-class cricket. He's excelled at first-class cricket, averaged close to 50 as an opening bat, and I think that's damn impressive. And what we saw in Bangladesh, you know, century on debut and whatnot, I found him to be a very compact player. He's also a really good driver of the ball, and he's got that grit required to succeed at test level. Now, 241 balls is what he played. He might have gotten just 100 runs, but you need those kind of players still, I believe, especially when you were a struggling batting side. You need to blunt the new ball, you know, make it easier for batters next to come and delay their entry points. And he's someone who is very assured of his game. He knows his shots and he plays within himself. In fact, when he gets out, he's playing not within himself, right? I think, you know, being a left-handed opener and having that sort of skill set, he can thrive. He plays the ball quite late, and there's a lot to love about Azan Awais. But there's also not a lot to love about Imam Ul Haq, his opening batting partner. And Imam, you know, if you look at the raw numbers, okay, he's averaging 36 in test cricket, not bad for an opener. But if you break that down, right, like his home average is close to 55. And then away from home, he's averaging in the high 20s with the bat. And that, I feel, is a major flaw in his game. He often gets out within the first 15 balls. So ever since his comeback, he's played 6 knocks. There's only been one very good knock in which he scored 91, and he scored 164 runs in these 6 innings. So he's not really excelled, and he's gotten out to spin 5 times. Right arm off spinners 4 times and a slow left armer once. So that's another area that the West Indies need to be looking at. Roston Chase might as well bring himself on to bowl at Imam Ul Haq. But the thing with Imam is that, you know, he will do well square the wicket, especially on the offside. I think that's his strong zone. But you never feel he's set. Everyone got runs in this warm-up game. Literally everyone. Shaan Masood got 70. Babar and Azan got hundreds. Salman Ali Agha and Rizwan got 40s. I think Abdullah Fazal, another exciting young talent, he got to 50. But Imam scored 10 of 36. And I feel like he is, I don't know, he doesn't warrant a starting spot in the team. He's probably going to start for Pakistan. But, you know, I'd just rather open with Shaan and Azhan, because Shaan will play his natural game and try to score quick. And Azhan can kind of hold the fort. And then you have Abdullah Fazl, the new kid who also did well versus Bangladesh. Bat at three is what he did versus Bangladesh. Pakistan will probably bat Abdullah Fazl at five in the South Shakil role and go with Shaan Masood at three and Imamul Haq as Azhan's opening partner. I'm not happy with this because this also adds an extra batter to the team. And that means that, I don't know, maybe Salman Ali Agha is the only spinner, or perhaps they sacrifice a seamer, right? It brings in issues. So what do you think about this?
Well, it's again, it's a lot of combinations you could try. I think from a West Indian perspective as well, looking at the bowlers, I would be wondering, where's Shaheen Afridi? Where's Nassim Shah? They're sort of the household names we're looking at. And then you've got Mohammed Abbas, who, interestingly enough, I commentated on in England here on a few Derbyshire games, and they were angry. They had no idea that Mohammed Abbas was on the radar of Pakistani cricket. So he's someone who's been called in as well. So I'm looking at Pakistan as sort of reverse of West Indies. The batting looks experienced and looks solid enough. The bowling is where I have question marks. Will they be able to take 20 wickets against West Indies cricket? What's sort of your perspective on how they've lined up from here? No Noman Ali as well. So they're not particularly looking for spin conditions here, which could backfire on them.
Yeah, it very well could. I mean, Noman Ali, he, in my eyes, is an unsung hero. I loved watching him play. Just the general energy as well, his smile and his celebrations. And he just put a lot of heart into his cricket. But age probably wasn't on his side. He did underperform in the last couple of test matches where he played. And the guy that they've brought in, Ali Usman, has really excelled in domestic cricket. He's also a slow left-armer. He can also bat a bit. I think his first-class average is in the low 20s. So that's something, right? And he recently was part of that game where the lowest ever total was defended in first-class cricket. I think his team defended like 40. Yeah. Now, I'm sure the pitch had a role to play in that game. I didn't watch it, but certainly if a team isn't able to chase down 40 runs in the fourth innings, then the pitch has to have played a role. But I think they're just moving on from Noman Ali. Nassim Shah and Shaheen Shah Afridi, they'll have to manage the workloads. There have been fitness issues. I don't think Shaheen has been the same bowler ever since he, you know, injured his knee. And it was a freak injury to start off in Sri Lanka in a test match, you know, fielding. And then he worsened it when Pakistan, you know, kind of accelerated his comeback to the team for the 2022 T20 World Cup. And he just hasn't been the same bowler since. He's lost that bite. You know, now he gets driven on those fuller length deliveries where once he used to castle batters. So I feel like if Shaheen was the sort of guy who could crank it up, he still had a role to play. But Shaheen cannot hold his length. And so I'm personally all right with him not being in the test side. I think that's fine. And Nassim Shah, again, fitness issues. Otherwise, he would be a candidate in my eyes. Mohammad Abbas, I'm really happy that he's getting a run now. Finally, after all these years of not being selected and doing wonders in the county championship. Like, I remember, maybe Mookie's even watching this, one of our paid subscribers. He once said that if Mohammad Abbas can take wickets with, at times, a kookaburra ball at Trent Bridge in the county championship, then he can take wickets in Pakistan as well, or in test cricket. So he'll probably be that, you know, line and length bowler, probably pepper the wobble seam and pepper a channel and just challenge both edges by nipping the ball off the deck in either direction. I feel like, you know, Mohammad Abbas is someone who can bowl really long spells as well. So he can hold an end and get the odd wicket. And I feel that can be very, very handy. Now, Khurram Shahzad is another guy. He's taken 28 wickets in 7 test matches. He can nip the ball off the deck in either direction as well, but he gets to swing the ball too. He is a bit leaky. The economy rate is 4, but his strike rate is 40. So he does well picking up wickets. And against left-handers, his record is exceptional. The strike rate goes down to 30. 16 of his 28 wickets have come up versus lefties. So he's someone who could partner Mohammad Abbas with the new ball. And then if you don't want to play Khurram Shahzad, you could play Mohammad Ali, who did well in the touring game, the practice game. He took 3 wickets. He was unfortunate to play for Pakistan in tests when they were playing on highways, absolute roads at home. So his test record doesn't look great, but recently he's done well. He's also played in the county championship. And maybe they're just picking all of these guys for England ultimately, right? Because they've got the experience and the same squad will go over there. But Mohammad Ali, I don't see him playing in tandem with Abbas and Khurram Shahzad, because then you don't have an enforcer. And as an enforcer, Pakistan have picked 2 guys this time because Hasan Ali wasn't working. And you've got Amir Jamal, who can bat a bit as well. And he was really good in Australia in that 3-match test series, but didn't really do anything outside of that. And then you've got Ubaid Shah, who didn't bowl in the practice game. And that pissed me off a bit because he's someone who's picked up 72 wickets in 16 first-class games. His first-class strike rate is 37. He's also leaky, goes at four runs and over. But, you know, he's taking his wickets at around 25 apiece. So why would you not have an enforcer in the side for when, you know, the pitch is flat and you need a wicket? So hopefully he is in plans for these test matches. Maybe he won't play the first one. But I reckon Pakistan will go batting heavy. They'll take a leaf out of the Gautam Gambhir book. As I said, Imam will probably open with Azhar Owais. Then you'll have Shaan Masood at three, Babar at four. At five, they'll bring in Abdullah Fazal. And there's another guy, Awais Zafar, who also scored like 60-odd runs in the practice game, but I don't think they're going to hand him his debut right away. So that'll be your top five. And at six and seven, you'd have Salman Ali Agha and Rizwan in whatever order. Recently, they've started, you know, promoting Salman, but I think he actually bats better with the tail. But that's batters till seven. And when you have batters till seven with a half-rounder in Salman Ali Agha, who's not going to bowl a lot of overs, you need four really, really good bowlers. And then if they go for Ali Usman and Amir Jamal, because those guys can bat a bit, and I know how Pakistan thinks about these things, then you're left with Mohammad Abbas and one of Mohammad Ali and Khurram Shahzad, and that's not the way to go. So if it were up to me, I would get rid of Imam, I would open with Shaan and Azhar and have Abdullah Fazal at three, and that would allow me to play potentially Ubaid Shah. Or maybe even Mohammad Ali, even though I'm not in favor of three new ball bowlers, but maybe. Because I feel like Pakistan really missed the trick in understanding test cricket. They don't get that 20 wickets win you a test match. And that has been a big issue for them in the past. And they've got to turn that tide around. Because based on what we've seen in Taruba, they'll need bowlers, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So do you think Pakistan at this stage are almost lining up fearful of losing rather than looking for a win? What sort of the mindset is it? Because you're saying it's more of a cautious approach by having that bat in depth, and it could backfire. Is that sort of how Pakistan, the team and the think tank, are approaching test cricket at the moment? They're just trying to avoid losing rather than going for wins against sides?
I think that's what they've done for a fair bit. And I'm hoping that changes. They've also got a new coach. I know Sarfaraz Ahmed lost his first series in Bangladesh, but no, I'm not sure if he's the right man for the job, but you know, you've got to back your coach, and he's someone who's served Pakistan really well, won them a trophy, that Champions Trophy, right? Maybe he can get these boys to click, but I really want them to rid themselves of that fear of failure. Because, you know, if Amir Jamal and Ali Usman are averaging in the 20s, then combined, that's your number seven bat. So why are you so fearful? Just go out there, pick the extra bowler, go for 20 wickets and win the test. And I fear that they still won't do this. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I hope they do exactly this and surprise everyone. But I feel like they'll still take the cautious approach, and that's just not the way to go. Plus, if you followed Pakistan cricket off late, and you'll know this from that series in Multan, they have really struggled to wipe out the tail. That has really been holding them back in test cricket. I can't even count the number of times on my fingers now, because every series this happens. Literally happened in Bangladesh as well. They don't want to be in a situation once again where they've got West Indies 6 down for 100 and they concede 288. And that might happen. Mark my words. Justin Greaves, Roston Chase, hundreds. It could still happen.
Yeah, because I remember the Multan series. I think Gudakesh Moti was batting at eight, and he was our top scorer. We made him.
Yep.
You guys made him look like Brian Lara has come down the order. So again, that points to that suggests more of a psychological issue in terms of not being able to bowl out the tail end. From a West Indian perspective, I'm hoping we see that again, and I hope you guys fail to get the 20 wickets. But yeah, it will be a very interesting battle between two sides at the bottom of the table, and you know, a lot of pressure on both coaches by the sounds of it. Because even if I know Sammy's got the win against Sri Lanka, if he loses the series against Pakistan, the same calls will come back around. Is he suitable as a long term sort of test coach? So a lot of pressure and a lot riding on this series.
Absolutely, and I feel like, you know, Pakistan have tried everything else, so might as well try to be a bit brave. Let's see whether or not that happens. But if they bat first in Taruba, based on what I've seen, then that should help them. Whichever team wins should probably win the toss and bat, because eventually the pitch will start to break a bit and batting in the fourth innings might get challenging. And if either of the West Indies or Pakistan can get to 350 or 400 in the first innings, that might be game, I feel.
Yeah. And I also feel with both sides pretty much, I mean, are probably at this point mathematically out of contention for the World Test final. They should both be using this next year to kind of trial and tinker with their sides. Nothing, no real pressure in terms of World Test Championship points. I know they're still looking for the wins. And then at least you'll be able to formulate your best sort of 11 or who works going into the next cycle starting in June or July. So, I mean, both sides almost have a free hit in terms of being able to experiment. So it would be a shame if we kind of go down the cautious route.
Absolutely. And Pakistan are very lucky that they're getting five test matches in quick succession and all of them are away from home. All five test matches versus the Duke's ball. This should be a good outing for them. And I reckon, like, if they win a test match in the West Indies, win one in England, that's still a step up from where they are currently. But they'll want to win both series, of course. However, I completely agree with you. This period for both Pakistan and the West Indies needs to be treated as a period where you tinker, you experiment, you figure out what your best team looks like, you maybe hand in a few debuts, and kind of build towards the next World Test Championship cycle. So it remains to be seen whether or not that'll be the case, because of course it is Pakistan and the West Indies ultimately, and they never fail to surprise us, and it is always chaos central. Throw England into that mix as well, I suppose, at this point. But anyway, that kind of wraps up our conversation on Pakistan. Santoki, before you leave me, I want some predictions from you. I'll give mine as well. Who do you think will be the top run scorer of the series?
Out of both sides?
No, just pick one.
Oh, so for I think overall, I'm going to go with our man Justin Graves.
All right, Justin Graves
will build the momentum.
I think I've picked him for many of these predictions in the past, and I'll just do it once again because at some point it's got to come true. So Babar Azam for me.
I thought you'd be going for Iman Al-Haq.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I don't know, man. Something feels right this time with Babar. I feel like he's in a better headspace than before. And he did kind of thrive with the bat when he captained initially. However, the pitches weren't particularly good. But I don't know, like winning the PSL with Peshawar Zalmi, then scoring some knocks versus Bangladesh in that test series, even though he didn't convert them. But I think he's in a good patch of form and he might just get the surfaces over here. So I think Babar Azam could cash in. So I'll go him. Okay, leading wicket taker in the series.
I mean, there's a lot of Pakistan options. I mean, Abbas, Shahzad, they could pick up a handful of wickets. But I'm going to keep the West Indian theme, and I'm going to say potentially, because it could be his last ever Test series, Kemal Roach, I think, might want to end on a high. Recently hit 300 wickets. There's a lot of talk that, you know, this will be his last series, 38 years old. So I think the type of player he is, he'll want to finish on a high. So I'll go with Kemal Roach as the romantic idea.
I love it. And, you know, just for the knowledge of our viewers, Kemal Roach is only the fourth West Indian seamer and fifth West Indian bowler overall to get to 300 test wickets. And he's an elite company, right? Like, he's got the likes of Malcolm Marshall, Courtney Walsh, Kirtley Ambrose, Lance Gibbs, and I'm forgetting someone. Actually, no, that's it. Those are the other four. The fifth one is Kemal Roach. So I love your pick, but I don't think he'll play both tests. So I won't go Kemal Roach. I will stick to the West Indian theme, though. I'll go Jaden Seals. He wrecked Pakistan last year in the limited over series. I feel like Jaden Seals with the new ball will, you know, get a lot of outside edges. And if the West Indies can catch in the slip cordon, then that's a lot of wickets for him. So I'll go Seals. And who do you think will be the player of the series?
Player of the series, I'm going to go with... Well, I'm hoping we get a 2-0 win, so it'd be Rostin Chase, Captain Rostin Chase, leading us to a 2-0 win over Pakistan.
All right, well, I'll go Justin Greaves this time. I feel like he'll do just enough with both bat and ball.
We put a lot of pressure on Justin Greaves this episode.
Trust Pakistan to give wickets to the weakest link in the bowling attack. It's kind of a Pakistan thing, man.
Yeah.
And I feel like Justin Greaves is probably, you know, West Indies' sixth bowler. I'd have him behind Roston Chase because Chase will be bowling a lot more. So yeah, I'll pick Justin Greaves just because he has this weird knack of really excelling once he gets going. Series or scoreline prediction for you?
My heart's saying 2-0 West Indies, but I think we'll mirror our last series in the Caribbean, 1-1.
Yeah, I feel like both these teams produce 1-1 results quite frequently in the Caribbean. In Multan, it was 1-1. So I'll stick to 1-1 once again. But I will say this. I think it's more likely for the West Indies to win this series than for Pakistan to win it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say we're slightly ahead in percentages in terms of being favourites.
Yeah.
Which is a rare thing to say.
Even on the points table. The funniest thing would be that Pakistan actually win a test match, but in the next test match, they have overrate issues and that win gets cancelled. Because it's happened to them before. Anyway, thank you for your time, Santoki. It was a pleasure recording this show with you. And thank you to all of our viewers from both Combox and CCP. And we're going to do more and more of these collaborations moving forward. In fact, we might just do this entire series. But it was great fun. Hope you had fun as well.
Absolute pleasure, yeah.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.